For 6 weeks, we are focusing on being visibly connected to the heart of Christ, and that is in a series called The Heart of Christ. And I have Ryan dancing for a couple slides here because they're boom, boom, boom. So, and this comes from our vision statement. Through the summer, we're going to be picking apart our vision statement, and we're going to be looking at pieces of the vision statement. So the very beginning of our vision statement is where the Heart of Christ series comes from, and that is that our vision statement is being a church visibly connected to the heart of Christ by actively bringing hope to the community through serving, transforming, and reproducing others to the same heart and actions. So that's our vision statement, and that's where this first part comes from, to be connected to the heart of Christ, to be visibly connected to the heart of Christ. And through this study, we've got two expectations. Every Sunday, through these 6 Sundays, we want 2 things to happen. One, we want to connect to the heart of Christ. Okay, for some of you guys, it's a brand new connection. It's a brand new connection to that part of the heart. It's tough to get out there. I have to practice that one. So, it might be a new connection to that part of the heart of Christ. You might be connected to his heart, and this might be a new area for you on a specific Sunday during this series. And you say, you know what? I haven't really connected with that part of his heart, and I need to. And so maybe it's a brand new connection. Maybe for some of you, it might be you're brand new in your walk with Christ. You're brand new, or you're entering into a walk with Christ. You're considering coming and being baptized into Christ, and this is a great series for someone that's beginning. And also, for some of you who are sharing with other people, this would be a good series to send them to on the website as a beginner, you know, series to... Hey, we have 6 weeks about connecting with the heart of Christ, and this is a tool that you can use outside of here, outside of these 6 Sundays right here in this room, to be able to share it. If you have an opportunity with someone and you're trying to help them connect to the heart of Christ, this can be a tool to help you. Either you can go and listen and share it that way, or you can send them straight to the website. So just some ways that we can use this. So that's to connect for the first time. For some of us, it's a reconnection. Something has happened. We've kind of wandered away. We've kind of been estranged, or maybe there's some bitterness or something's crept into our relationship there, or someone has cut in on a race. Something has interrupted that connection. And so during the series, we need to reconnect to the heart of Christ, or reconnect to certain parts of his heart that we have grown callous to, or we've got some scars that are preventing that connection. We need to reconnect. And for some of you, this is a deepened connection. You have a connection, you're in tight, and this is just another layer deeper. You're stretching yourself, getting a little deeper. So for all of us fall in one of those 3 categories. And so this series, for every one of us, we can and should connect to the heart of Christ in one of those 3 ways, whichever way applies to you. And the second goal of every Sunday is to not only just connect, but to do something about that connection, to live as someone connected to the heart of Christ. To live that connection, to that it would change your worldview, that it would change the way you look at other people, it would change the way you live, the way you act, the things you say, that your choices, your actions, the outcomes, all of that would be affected and changed because you are connected to the heart of Christ. And then that's when it becomes visibly connected to the heart of Christ. And that's our goal there. So we've talked about on Easter Sunday a life-giving, victorious heart. The following Sunday, we talked about an accepting, forgiving heart. Last week, we talked about a driven, intentional heart. And this week, with it being Mother's Day, we're kind of looking at a little bit of the feminine side of, and you know, if I had time, and I really debated on doing this, there's a neat little exercise you can do to see how God really possesses feminine and masculine qualities. And so he, in his wholeness, possesses all of them. So there's no quality feminine or masculine, that's a good quality that God doesn't have or come from God. So all of our mothers, the compassion, the nurturing, the caring, all of that just comes straight from them being made in the image of God. And so that's kind of why we're in that area today. Today we're looking at the compassionate, caring heart of Christ. Then next week we're talking about the patient, the enduring heart, so bouncing back to a masculine, you know, I want to stick with it. I want to just, you know, the... in Taekwondo, where's Jim? It's the indomitable spirit, you know. So the patient, enduring heart. And then the final message is going to be on the kind, gentle heart. So today we're going to be doing something a little bit different. I'm going to share a couple of stories with you. And we're going to, let's put our notes aside. Okay, we're going to kind of break the brain in half here a little bit. So a little lobotomy on Sunday morning. But what we're going to do, just set your notes aside, and we're going to look at two stories, and we're going to kind of venture through, look at these stories, kind of glean some things from the stories without really actively working at it. And then we're going to pull our notes out and then kind of put it together there on our notes. So story number one comes from Luke chapter 7. And it's about a widow in Nain. Luke chapter 7, starting at verse 11, says, "Soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow." Go back. There we go. Okay. I was looking for the... So, here in a few minutes in some of the slides we're going to look at, there are going to be some highlighted words, just to let you know that's coming. Those are going to be some focal points. Before we get to some of those highlighted words, just looking at the way Luke describes this, I mean, Luke was a detail guy, and he says this was the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. So that means there are no men left in her life at all. This was her only son, and he's dead. She lost her husband however many years ago, or however recent ago, we don't know, but she was a widow, and now she's lost her son. Now, for those of us who have experienced loss of a loved one, we know the emotional pain that would have gone along with this woman, and I don't know if there are many of us here that would really, you know, be able to relate to being a widow and burying your son, your only son. That escalates it even more. So we can understand a little bit from our experiences, or at least from experiencing what others have gone through with the loss of, we can understand the emotional side of it, a little bit of what she was going through. Some of us maybe even closer to the amount of emotional pain that she was going through. But what we miss in our culture is a whole nother side to this that was equally as painful, maybe even more painful, because this pain didn't go away. This pain, some things can heal. You can work through it, and there's a mourning process. And those of you who have been through that, you know the memory's always there, but every day you're a little closer to more healing and more understanding and more accepting. And so this side, but this side, which our culture doesn't get, is the fact that this woman was just completely in despair. She was completely at a loss now, because in their culture, the men were the providers. They provided. Women were not the providers. They couldn't provide. They didn't have life insurance, you know, where her husband died and she's a widow. And so now she's drawing, you know, life insurance, or if he's in the military, then she's drawing the military, you know, kickback there. They didn't have any of that then. So as a widow, when her husband passed, she had no way of financially staying stable or being, she was in a tremendous economical situation, but the hope of her son being there, that her son would take over the position of the father in the house, the man of the house, that he would take care of his mom on a financial level, on an economical level, now he's gone and she is in despair and hopeless, and this is not a despair that's going to go away with time. She is in bad shape. On so many levels, and we miss that sometimes. We miss the level of despair that is in this story. So this woman, at the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord, what? Saw her. He noticed. He saw her. He paid attention. He was observant. He saw her. And his heart went out to her. Another word for that would be compassion. He had compassion for her. His heart went out to her. He felt for her. He saw her. He noticed. His heart went out. And then he said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the coffin. We're going to hit a bunch of verbs here in a minute. I want you to notice that Jesus's his compassion was always connected to action. His compassion was never empty. His compassion was always linked to action. Always there. So he saw her and his heart went out to her, and the very next, you know, he jumps right in. He went to the coffin. He touched the coffin. He's going to speak to this boy. He's going to bring him back to life. He's going to give him to her. All action, action, action. Verb, verb, verb. His compassion was connected to action. And that's a powerful, powerful combination. I don't want you to miss that this morning. So he went up and touched the coffin. Those carrying it stood still, and he said, Okay, verb. Young man, I say to you, get up. The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. They were all filled with awe and praised God. Okay, so we get to the next step here, is that everyone there, they were in awe, and what'd they do? They praised God. They worshiped because of what had happened. They praised God. So all that were there, they were filled with awe and praised God. A great prophet has appeared among us, they said. God has come to help his people. This news about Jesus, what? It spread. This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country. So story one, he sees her, he saw her, he took notice, he was observant. He had compassion on her, his heart went out to her. His compassion was linked to action. He did something about his compassion. In Jesus' position, he had the power to raise this boy from the dead. And so he did. He did what he had in his power to do. He raised her son, and then people around, they praised God because of what Jesus had done. And then news spread. Story number two. A little bit of a different angle, but some very similar things. Mark chapter 1, this is a story about a leper. And instead of, in the first story with the widow, Jesus initiates the contact. He sees her. He initiates the contact. In this one, the leper comes to Jesus. So as we read in verse 40, it says, a man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Filled with what? Compassion. Filled with, his heart went out to him. Filled with compassion. Jesus reached out. You see that? You see how close that verb is? I mean, it's only a word apart, and the only word between compassion and the verb is Jesus. You know, so he felt compassion, and he took action. Compassion and action, they're linked together in the way that Jesus treated people around him. He had compassion. He was filled with compassion. He reached out his hand. He touched him. He touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him, and he was cured. Verb, you know, just verbs all through that. Action. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. So this guy wasn't obedient. Instead, he went out and began to talk freely. Doing what? Spreading the news. So with the widow in Nain, you know, Jesus doesn't say anything to her. News spread because of compassion connected with action, and the news spread. In this case, he said, don't say anything about it. It still couldn't help it from happening. The inevitable, that when compassion links together with action, news is going to spread about that. People are going to want to talk about that, even when they're told not to. And so he talked about that. So Jesus was filled with compassion. He responded immediately, and this is something just to kind of pause on for a moment too, is that Jesus, when this man comes up to him and says, you know, if you're willing, I can be made clean, and Jesus, boom, I'm willing. There wasn't any of that internal, you know, debate, that dialogue that some of us have when we are approached with someone that's a lesser desirable person. You know, because to be honest, we have people that are pleasant to be around, and then we've got people that are stinky, you know. We've got people that are not, no one's sitting around you, Terry. I saw you check, just to let you know, from this angle, I can see it pretty clearly. So it's kind of like when I'm standing turned around and the lights are hitting me, there's, you know, you can see my age pretty clearly through the back of my head, which isn't so fun. But so we have, okay, so you got pleasant people and stinky people, unpleasant people. You've got some people that are enjoyable to be around, and you like being around, and you've got some people that are just obnoxious. You've got some people that are like in your comfort zone, and comfort zones are so interesting because your comfort zone is your comfort zone. You know, so whereas, you know, I'll pick on Natasha there. So whereas Natasha, she's like, you know, super comfortable with people just hanging around with tattoos and on motorcycles and, you know, all this stuff. You know, but some people over here, you know, in the business suits and the, you know, that's they're not a comfort zone so much for her. This is her comfort zone, where someone from this side of it, and you know, bear with me because a lot of people cross a lot of these lines in different areas. But the idea is that wherever you are, whatever your group is, your comfort zone, the people furthest from that, they're going to be uncomfortable for you. And so we deal with this. And we have a judgmental peace to us. And I think the initial righteous part of that is that we are made in God's image and God is the judge. He is, and we are made to be able to judge between right and wrong. We have moral compasses stamped on our soul, and that is the image of God that we are made in. So I think the righteous side of us having judgments and being able to make right and wrong judgments, I think there's a righteous side of that. But then there's a twisted side, a place where sin gets a hold of it and we become judgmental, and it's such a thin line. You know, between saying this is right and this is wrong, and then we go into this judgmental side of things where we don't want to be around someone because they're doing this or they're this kind of person or they have this action in their life, and we get to where we're and some people call that judging them, which I think the correct term is that yes, I'm judging them. You see an apple tree, it has apples on it, it's an apple tree. There's nothing wrong with saying it's an apple tree, but what people are saying when they say you're judging them is really they're saying you're being judgmental of them. You're building walls and separating yourself from them because of this right and wrong moral judgment that you've made. And so we have these situations, and I think innately we are judgmental people when we let the righteous side of it get out of hand. And so for us, we have to mentally and emotionally prepare for those type of situations. He was approached by a leper. And if you can just picture this and imagine this guy was literally falling apart. I mean, he was rotting. You were living through a process of your body rotting away. That was the disease of leprosy. Sometimes the nose would fall off, the ears would fall off, and it was just, I mean, literally just falling apart. And so this guy comes up to Jesus and begs him, you know, if you're willing. You know, a lot of us, when we're approached by that type of situation, whether or not if it's someone that we don't feel comfortable around, or someone that we don't like to be around, or they're obnoxious, or they're stinky, or whatever your label is of someone that's uncomfortable for you, and they come into your presence and they say, hey, I need your help. I think this goes across the board, we have to have that inner monologue of, okay, what's the right thing to do? I know what I want to do. I want to turn and run, or I want to ignore this person, or I want to do this or do that. But we have this inner monologue where we have to talk ourselves into having compassion on this person, or talk ourselves in. I mean, is this, yes? Okay, come on, stand with me on this one. It's not just me. I believe that's all of us. And so Jesus bypasses that because he comes prepared mentally and emotionally, already deciding that I want to love these people. I want to have compassion on these people, no matter who it is that comes up to me. And that's a preparation that happens. So let's go and take some notes on this. A lot of this we've already talked about, so we're going to be able to kind of move through this fairly quickly. So Jesus' compassionate, caring heart. Jesus actively observed and responded to those around him. And this is a combination of both of the stories. He actively observed. You can see that in the widow and Nain. And this, the widow and Nain, is one story, but you can find just a bazillion different stories in that. Well, bazillion might be an exaggeration, but you can find a lot of stories in the Gospels of people who Jesus saw, and Jesus initiates the contact. Jesus initiates that. And you see that he is actively observant. He is observing. He is always looking. And he sees the people that are hurting, the people that are in need, the people that need help. And his heart goes out to him. He has compassion on them. The other side of it is that he's ready to respond. He's in a position to respond. We're going to look at this a little more in detail. But he's in a position to respond like the leper. You see a lot of stories in the Gospels like the leper, where people come to Jesus and they ask him for things, or they beg him for things. And Jesus kind of has this already set up mental and emotional position. And let's take some notes on that. Let's go back to the eyes of how Jesus sees. His eyes notice people in need because of the love in his heart. So Jesus notices. He sees these things. He's observant. He's actively observing because he's got love in his heart. You know, this series is about the heart of Christ. What makes his heart beat? What drives him? And he's got love, and that's what affects his eyes. What's inside affects the outside. And what we look at, what we look for, what grabs our attention in the people around us and the world we live in, our culture, our society, our families, or our the people at our workplace, all of that's going to be driven out of what's in your heart, and that's going to affect what your eyes see. And so Jesus, his eyes, they took notice of people because of the love in his heart. Now, the mental and emotional thing that we've been talking about here a little bit, that was that when people approached him, he was mentally and emotionally positioned to help them. He was already set up. He didn't have to adjust or readjust or think through. He had a mission and a vision for himself, his ministry, why he came, and that was to love people and to have compassion on people, to show God's grace, to show God's mercy. And that was to all people, all kinds, no matter who they were. He was already set up mentally and emotionally so that when someone like a leper came up to him, or a sinful woman that we'd talked about, he'd already mentally and emotionally prepared himself so there wasn't that jump that some of us have to make. And we're gonna apply that a little more personally here in a few minutes. Continuing down, Jesus' compassion was always accompanied by a caring action. His compassion was always accompanied by a caring action. They went together. You can see that in not just these two stories, but in many stories. We're going to be looking at another story here in a moment. And his compassion is linked to an action, to a caring action. After you're done writing, let's see if everybody, any pens moving. You want to put your pen down. Let me bring up your left hand. You can mirror me here. Left hand. His compassion, say compassion, was always linked to action. Say action. His compassion was always linked to action. Okay? I want you to remember that. I want you to take that home with you and to know that just having compassion, that's not going to get anything done for that person or for that group of people or for the kingdom or as a witness for Christ. It's the compassion when you link it together with an action, that's when people praise God. That's when word spreads about what a church is doing or what a Christian is doing or the impact that is being made for the kingdom. Impact doesn't happen just when you feel, when you take pity on someone or your heart goes out to someone or you have compassion for them. Impact happens when a church is visibly connected to the heart of Christ. Our mission statement here is revealing God through a church in motion. It isn't just the compassion. The compassion has to be linked to action. That's what our mission statement captures, revealing God through a church in motion. It's action. We want to show God by being active. So Jesus' compassion was always accompanied by a caring action. And then the touch of Jesus' compassion and care, and we're going to hit three things here real quick. One, improve the lives of others. When Jesus touched you, you knew it was going to be good. Yeah, I want to jump to the next category so quick. Let me take a quick commercial break on the way there. People, when we touch people, it should improve other people's lives. That's what our Savior did. That's what our leader did. If we're following in his footsteps and we're living like someone who's connected to the heart of Christ, I'm jumping out of my category right now, then our touch, when we touch someone's life, it should be to improve their life, not the opposite. So Jesus, when he touched people's lives, the touch of Jesus is, okay, I'm coming back in this category. So Jesus touched, it improved the lives of others. It brought praise to God. When Jesus touched someone out of compassion and he had caring actions, it resulted in people praising God. It brought praise to God. And the last one was very simply that it spread. When you have compassion connected with actions, it's going to spread. It's going to get known. People are going to talk about it, whether or not you tell them that they can't, or if you don't say anything about if they can or can't. It will spread. So then, let's bridge this with another story. There was a time when there was a lot of people that were coming to Jesus. I mean, just crowds of people. And he needed to get some space. He was getting worn out. His disciples were getting worn out. And so they wanted to get some space. So Jesus sends them, puts them on a boat. He gets on a boat. They go across and they're wanting to get some R&R. They go out to just a remote location where there's, you know, hopefully not going to be anybody there. They're specifically looking for some place to be for some solitude, for some rest, for some relaxation, to recoup, recharge, regenerate, so that they get back into the game. And so when they get there, they find out that all the people had followed them there. So I think we can relate to that sometimes when you're wanting to go for some rest and relaxation, you take your shoes off and then you get that phone call and you're like, oh man, time to pop it back in gear and head back out and go, you know. And so that's kind of what happens here. Mark chapter 6, it says, when Jesus landed and saw, there's that word again, saw a large crowd, he had what? Compassion on them. because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so in this situation, it was compassion on them, not because of some physical ailment, not because they had a dead relative or because they had leprosy or some sort of illness. He saw these people as sheep without a shepherd. And so what was his action here? He had compassion, and so he started teaching them a different action, but yet still, it's a verb, it's action. So he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so the disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." Now, last week we talked about how Jesus' ministry was driven. It was intentional. And how in Matthew's gospel, when we got to that part where Jesus said, "Hey, I'm coming to establish my church." Remember when we talked about that last week? And Peter made the confession, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." And he says, "You are Simon, you are Peter. And on this rock or on this confession, whichever way you want to look at it, I'm going to build my church, establish my church, and the gates of Hades will not be able to overcome it." Okay, just a powerful statement. And I talked to you guys about how leading up to that, prior to that, you can see all these different scenes where Jesus is training and teaching and molding and shaping his disciples to be this church that he's establishing. And so in these chapters prior, one of the things we talked about last week was this feeding of the 5,000 and about how Jesus was molding them and moving them and shaping them. And so the disciples, we get a chance to see a little bit of this about how they are starting to connect with the heart of Christ because they see all these people and they say, "Hey, we're in a remote place." They're going to get hungry. So there's compassion. They're getting it. And that's exciting. These people, because otherwise, if it wasn't out of compassion, they would have come up to Jesus and they would have said, "Hey, we're whipped. We came over here to rest and relax. Send these people away so we can do what we came here for." But no, they come over there and they say, "Hey, we're in a remote place. These people, they're hungry. They're going to need food. Why don't you send them away?" So they're thinking right. Their thinking is starting to change because their heart is connecting with Christ. And so the thinking's there, but Jesus stretches them even further. So their action steps, their compassion, their action is to send them away. Jesus corrects their action even further and he says, "Okay, instead of this action of sending them away, why don't you do something about it? Why don't you act? Why don't you reveal God through being a church in motion?" Not those exact words, but the idea there is that you do something. So they come to him, they say, "Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "That would take 8 months of a man's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And we were told in another gospel that the fish were small fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples. I think that's pretty awesome. He gave them to the disciples. So he's saying, "Okay, let me teach you this." He doesn't just go and do it. He starts it and then he hands it to them and he says, "Okay." He doesn't say, "You feed them." And then they go, "Well, what do we do?" "Oh, move!" And then he does it. No. He says, "You feed them." He helps them and lets them feed them. See that? I think that's a great model for us and anyone that's in church leadership and leading to understand that, as we stretch, as we move, as we lead, to be able to help people to stretch but walk them there. Don't do it for them. Help them, and when you get to the point where they can do it, then you let them do it, okay? With, of course, Lou, there's no leadership there needed. She's an experienced servant. But that's the goal. The end goal is to create, and Lou's the product of many other mentors in her past, correct, that taught her these things. And so when I call her and Lou says, "Oh, I'll make all these phone calls. Don't you worry about it, anything," she's... That's been the investment of other leaders in her life up to this point. And that's the goal of growing people to that point. And that's what Jesus was doing for his disciples. "Hey, you guys go and feed them. Let me show you how. Here's the bread. Go and feed them." And so they do. Taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. It's just amazing. Connect to the heart, or connect to Jesus' compassionate, caring heart by seeing people through Jesus' eyes. Connect by seeing people through Jesus' eyes. As we look at that, let me remind you of some things you already know that I think we all need to bring to the forefront of our thoughts from time to time. As we are looking and seeing people through Jesus' eyes, we need to remember that all people were made in God's image. All people. You know, when I made that list earlier of, you know, the desirables and the undesirables, the people that are fun to hang out with and the people that are obnoxious, the people that are pleasant, the people who smell, the people you're comfortable with, your comfort zone, whichever quadrant you live in or you belong to, and the people that are farthest away from you, that group and the people that are most uncomfortable to you. You know, when you look at all those people, you take that and you just kind of lay it flat because all of them are made in God's image, and that just levels the playing floor. Everyone. And I believe that's how Jesus saw people, because he knew that. He didn't just see a widow in Nain who was hurting. He saw a widow who was made in God's image who was hurting. He didn't just see a leper who was falling apart. He saw a leper who was made in God's image who was falling apart. And I think we need to pick that up and be reminded that all people were made in God's image. So if someone comes up to you and they are someone that you enjoy spending time with or someone you don't enjoy spending time with, they're still made in God's image, and we need to be reminded of that from time to time. All people were created to love and to be loved. God is love. We're made in his image, so we are made to love and to be loved. We need to remember that. That's going to help us to have compassion for people as we connect to the heart of Christ, to be able to have compassion, to look at someone and say, you know what? They were made to be loved. They were made to love. And if we hinder either side of that, then we're standing in the way of what God wants. So all people were made to be, or created to love and to be loved. And then all people have value and are important to God. All people have value and are important to God. And Jesus didn't just die for the Jews. He made it very plain that he was dying for all people. He didn't just die for one race or one nation. He didn't just die for Americans. You know, he didn't just die for one group or one type of person or someone that he died for this person because they're more moral than this person, or he died for this person because they take more baths than this person. He died for all men. All people are valuable and important to God, and we need to remember that. So that's connecting to the heart of Christ. Now, the second part of that, the second goal, is that we want to live as people that are connected to the heart of Christ. So living as a person connected to Jesus' compassionate, caring heart. So as we do that, as we achieve that, in order to achieve that, I need to keep my eyes open for those in need. And to keep my eyes open. Jesus, in his ministry and while he walked here, he was so actively observant. He saw all the things going on around him. He saw people in need. He would beeline to certain people. And we need to see the same thing. We need to look at that and say, you know, I need to be observative. I need to open my eyes to those around me. And sometimes we just get blinders on, and we're so busy. We're so focused on the things that need to be done. We're so focused. We're such a rushed society. And I'm guilty. I'm just as guilty as anybody in here. And it's so difficult when we get stuck in that rut that we don't see the people around us that are in need. Jesus wasn't in that rut. He wasn't so focused that he missed the reason why he was here. So we need to open our eyes. I need to open my eyes. We need to be mentally and emotionally prepared ahead of time to help others. If we're going to live that way, we need to do that. We need to plan. We need to, just like Jesus, he was positioned already emotionally and mentally. We need to do the same thing. When you wait for it to happen, when you wait for someone in need to come before you, you're going to have that conversation inside your head. Okay, what's the right thing to do? I need to do it. What would Jesus do? And sometimes that leads to you doing it reluctantly, where if you make the decision ahead of time and you are mentally and emotionally prepared for whatever comes your way, whatever you see or whoever comes your way, then your response is going to be an immediate one. Yes, I'm willing to help. What can I do to help you out? And it bypasses all of that. And then instead of you doing it begrudgingly, you're going to be doing it willingly, willfully. You're going to be doing it. You might actually enjoy it because you're living like Jesus. You're connected to his heart and you're living like someone who's connected to his heart. And in the last part there, just the same, the hand, but it's just kind of backwards. So caring actions must accompany compassion. Caring actions must accompany my compassion. If you just have compassion, it's good because your heart's reflecting that of Christ. But if there's no actions attached, what good's it doing? I know sometimes you guys like to pack up, so we're done taking notes. You can go on and pack up. But as you're packing up, I want to share with you a story. This is in Luke chapter 10. Jesus is approached by a guy and he says, hey, what's the greatest commandment? What's the most important commandment? And Jesus said, well, how do you read it? What do you read the greatest commandment is? And he says, well, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, you're correct. And so this guy, trying to get out of loving his neighbor, he's trying to kind of find a loophole, find a way, you know, in that same situation where we look at people and say, well, we got the desirables and the undesirables. You know, okay, so who's my neighbor? You know, what side of the line is my neighbor on? You know, is it these people that I'm comfortable with? They live in the same neighborhood as I do, or they have the same type of hobbies or whatever. You know, and so he says, who is my neighbor? And so instead of giving him a straight answer, Jesus tells a story, and many of you are familiar with this story. In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, they beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest, so a church guy, a church leader, happened to be going down the same road. And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So he saw him, but he passed by. We don't know if he had compassion. We know he didn't have action. So if he had compassion, then there was no link. Get to the next guy here. So, two, a Levite. Okay, so if the priest was like a preacher or a church employee, then you got a Levite. Then say that would be like an elder or a Sunday school teacher or another type of leader in the church. When he came to the place and saw him, so he saw him too, he passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, and we don't get how grossly offensive this story is. I mean, Jesus was in the business of offending people, so I guess I shouldn't feel so bad when I offend people because I'm just walking in his footsteps. And not because I'm doing it on purpose, but Jesus, this was an offensive story. We don't get that. This Samaritan, now if we can just think of the most unlikely person, the most offensive person to one-up a preacher or to one-up an elder, just think of that, whoever that person would be in your mind, someone that you'd think, there's no way this person would do a good thing. They're so full of sin. They're the sinners. You know, the Samaritan. This would have communicated to his audience. A Samaritan, one of these undesirables, a stinky person, or even worse, someone who is morally disconnected from God, someone who lived a life that was immoral. And pick your immorality, attach it to this person as you're thinking about this. What sin is most offensive to you? You know, maybe this person was an alcoholic, maybe this person was a drug user, maybe this person was a homosexual. Whatever is the most uncomfortable area for you, let that be who you connect the Samaritan to, because that's what this would have connected to the Israelites, the Jews that Jesus was talking to. This Samaritan, this guy far from the chosen people of God, he comes by. As he traveled, he came to where the man was. He saw him and took pity on him. We don't know if the other guys had compassion. We know they didn't have actions. This guy saw him, had compassion. He took pity on him. His heart went out to him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds. verb, verb. Pouring on oil and wine, verb. Then he put the man on his own donkey, verb. Took him to an inn, verb. Took care of him, verb. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper, verb, verb. Look after him, he said. And when I return, verb, I will reimburse you, verb, for any extra expense you may have. His compassion was attached to action. Compassion was attached to action. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, and I believe Jesus tells us 2,000 years later, go and do likewise.